Welcome to the Your Favorite Band podcast, the podcast where we talk to your favorite bands about how your favorite bands became your favorite bands. It's good to be back, and it's good to be with today's guest. This guest, I heard for the very first time. I was driving home from Asheville, North Carolina, and his song David came on the radio, and I was like, I like this guy. And so now I get to have him on talking about his new album. Welcome Noah Gunderson to the show. Noah, thanks so much for coming on, man. I want you to know before we dive into some questions that I've listened to your new album, and it's fantastic. I love it. I love the sound.
Well, thank you. Good.
So I know you know this because you're a big fan of the podcast, but basically what we do is we try to take a little journey through your discography and then really hammer on the most recent stuff. So you have quite a few releases, so I'm going to try to do my best not to harp on one for too long, and I'm going to kind of lump a few of them together. But take us back to kind of the beginning. I know you kind of have a similar upbringing. I was raised in a Christian home too, so I know the type of music that I was allowed to listen to. So I'm curious what it was like for you, Noah, to grow up and what you were listening to and what kind of got you into music.
Well, my first memory of music was Bob Dylan's Everything Is Broken off the Oh Mercy record.
Okay.
We listened to that, listened to like Slow Train Coming, the gospel records. And then there was the like Keith Green, Larry Norman thing, the kind of like early pioneers of the Christian music scene.
Yeah.
Some of that stuff. And then like, I'm sure, you know, like DC Talk and all those terrible bands.
Did you hear DC Talk? They came back and they did a cruise. Like that was their big comeback thing. Was they did a cruise?
That doesn't surprise me. It's such a strange position to be in. I think I like now as a bit of a little bit older and having seen the music industry a little bit more, I can't imagine how it must feel to be some of those bands where it's like it's explicitly exploitive of a certain subgenre of people and of music, but it's you're a replacement for the secular version of you.
Yeah.
Or you know what I mean? For like the parents of the kids who, you know, like who kids who would normally be listening to, I don't know, Blink-182 or something, or like Nirvana, but instead they're not allowed to. So here's the white bread Christian version of that you're just supposed to, and that, you know, so that must be a really strange identity crisis for those groups.
Yeah. And it must also be weird for them in particular to know like, all right, we can come back and we can do a cruise and probably get paid a lot of money and then just call it a day.
Yeah.
Why not?
I mean, it's similar to like hitting the like casino circuit or something.
Yeah.
But I don't know, man, the music industry is a weird place, and like, you know, if we're able to living in it.
It's interesting right now, just because of how big nostalgia is, you see a lot of, not just cruises, but like the 10-year album tours where bands will do these 10-year things, and it's just kind of like, oh yeah, let's relive where we were 10 years ago. It's an interesting thing.
Yeah, a lot of the emo bands are doing that, I noticed.
Yeah, because, you know, that was a fun time in life. Let's relive it.
Yeah.
So
I think Morgan. Yeah.
What was that? I'm sorry.
Oh, I said, I think they all have mortgages they're trying to pay, and they're realizing this is a very financially feasible way to go about doing
that's
that.
Exactly.
But
what it is.
Anyways, enough of that. Let's move on.
Yeah. So I read that when you were 18, you left home to start pursuing music. So talk a little bit about that decision and how you kind of came up with the conclusion, I'm just going to go for it. I'm going to leave home and I'm going to try to make it.
Well, it was something I always wanted to do. There was nothing, I had no other plan. I didn't go to college. I desire to do anything else. So at the beginning, for me, it was as simple as long as I can pay my bills, you know, I want to be able to make music. So if that meant working some kind of menial job on the side, that as long as I could get to play songs. And then it kind of evolved to this place where I thought, well, I don't really have any overhead. I don't have any really that many bills. And if I kind of just float around, I don't have to pay rent. So I started doing that, and just playing coffee shops and basically playing for food and gas money, which means I wasn't really at a place where it was sustainable yet for me. So I wanted to be in Seattle. I wanted to be plugged into the music scene up here. So I ended up getting a job, up in Seattle here. I worked at a guitar store for a few years, while kind of getting my feet under me. Had a couple placements on a TV show that kind of helped me financially be able to pursue music full time.
Yeah.
And that was around 2011, I guess.
Yeah.
So it's been a little bit here.
Was your family, your parents supportive of 18-year-old Noah, like skipping college and going for the music thing?
Yeah, they really were. They've been supportive all the way, which has been a huge, huge blessing.
Yeah. That's awesome. So let's talk a little bit about your first three EPs, Brand New World, Saints and Liars, and Family. As I was listening back over those, they're pretty much entirely acoustic. They're pretty stripped down. So talk a little about the decision early on to make such intimate, acoustically led music versus having a full band with a more electric sound.
Well, I don't know if it was so much a conscious decision as much as it was just what I was good at. And that's what I'd done. You know, like music writing had always been kind of a solitary thing for me. As a kid, I would just spend most of my time in my room writing songs because I didn't have any friends. And so I wrote songs instead. And that was always by myself. So it just came naturally that I, you know, record those songs that way. And I had some forays into some bands that, I had begun to experiment with recording with a band, of the Family came out. But it's a totally different thing. And I think when you're really used to being by yourself and working by yourself, and kind of playing to the beat of your own drum, it takes a minute to transition, or at least it did for me. It took a minute to transition into being comfortable playing with a group and knowing how to do that differently.
Yeah. To expand on that a little bit, I know when you're working with yourself, it's easy to, you know, just do whatever you want. When you began to bring in more people, especially with this latest album, but when you began to work with more people, was it more of a, like, I want your input, or were you telling them, like, did you have a clear vision of where you want your music to go almost all the time?
It was a combination of things. I value the input of the people that I work with, and I want them to be able to express themselves artistically as well. I mean, at the end of the day, it's, you know, it's my name, it's my project, but I think collaboration is really valuable, and it's to respect other people's perspectives, and I think it can make for a much more fruitful if you allow people to be their best and reach their full potential. I had a producer involved in this record who helped orchestrate a lot of things, and so I was taking input from him, and we were going back and forth on ideas, and then the band was bringing their concepts in, and there were things that, like, didn't make it past the cutting room floor, but I tried to make sure it was an environment where everyone felt like they could be safe to express their ideas.
Yeah. That's great. And these first three EPs, going back to them, I believe they were released independently. I could be wrong. But talk a little bit about how early on you were trying to to put out that music and what it was like to try to figure out that on your own?
Well, I started record when I was about 13 on my dad's Tascam Studio 8, reel to reel, and just kind of, he taught me the basics, and I went from there. And then I had another buddy who started recording some other songs for me around 14 or 15. It was a progression. I knew that, like, recording my songs was an important thing to me from the very beginning. And so it was just, I kind of just did anything I could. Like, Saints and Lies was recorded by a friend in Spokane. And then Family was recorded by a producer down in Dallas. It was just the natural, the thing that felt most natural to do, get in and record in small pieces. I didn't have a lot of money, so EPs were the only thing that really made sense financially.
Yeah. We talked a little bit about it, but we both grew up in Christian houses, and it's clear, you know, throughout your music that you've kind of wrestled with your faith and been pretty open about that. One of my favorite songs by you is Jesus, Jesus, and I love a lot of the things that you bring up in that song. So what led you to decide to be open about your struggle with religion, knowing that people, probably your parents included in that, are going to hear that and have something to say about that? Was that a tough thing to do? Because that's a sticky subject to try to unpack.
I mean, again, I don't feel like it was ever really a conscious decision I made, to be or not to be vulnerable. From the beginning, songwriting was always a way of expressing myself in ways that I didn't feel I could express myself verbally to my peers or people around me. So it was just the natural thing to do, to write what I was feeling as I was, you know, going through that time.
Yeah.
I wanna hunt like David. I wanna kill me a giant man. I wanna slay my demons, but I got lots of them. I wanna hunt like David. I wanna kill me a giant man. I wanna slay my demons, but I got lots of them. Lots of them.
And that takes us to Ledges, which was your first full length in 2014. It's a bit more full than your EPs were as far as instrumentation goes. So why did you decide? Was it just this is the time to do an LP, or how did that all happen to break from the EP pattern and decide to add more instrumentation on those ones?
Yeah, I mean, it just felt like the right time to do it. I had enough songs. I had a little bit of money to be able to bear. When you're doing this stuff, it's not like you're thinking, or at least I wasn't thinking like, okay, now this is strategically the right time to do this or that. It was just like, well, I can do this now. Like, there's enough people that want this, and that it makes sense, and I have the songs, and I have the money to be able to record it. So that was kind of, you know, it's not as I'd like to say intentional or interesting, but it was really kind of just pragmatic.
Yeah. Take me into your songwriting. The way that you go about writing songs, I feel like your songs are really candid and really open and honest. We talked about the vulnerability, but talk about what it looks like to be in a room with Noah as you're writing a song.
Well, usually there is no one in the room. So it's just me, usually just me at the piano or me on the guitar, and hoping something cool comes out. It's sometimes it's something specific that I have a idea for that will come in the middle of the night or during the day, and then I'll try to flush that out.
Yeah.
Or other times it's just knowing that I feel better when I'm writing, when I'm expressing myself. So making a conscious effort to sit down with an instrument or sit down with a piece of paper and just try to get some stuff out. And a lot of times it doesn't end up being anything worthwhile, but I feel better. I mean, the songwriting has always been just like a self-therapy. That was always the first to do it.
Yeah. So do you typically play and just sing whatever comes to mind, or are you lyrics first type guy, or a little of both?
It's all over the place, man. It's kind of, it'll be melody or something that I get inspired by, or kind of singing some kind of nonsense hook that I eventually put lyrics to, and then sometimes it just comes. I mean, it's really hard to make it make sense where any of this stuff comes from.
Yeah.
I think some of us are just a certain frequency that we can choose to pay attention to or not. But I love music, and I've consumed a lot of music over the years, and I think that's definitely affected my intuition and my sensibilities. And, you know, I think those things, you can hear some of those bands coming through in the songs, but they've been filtered through my own lens.
Then the second round throws you to the floor, leaves you stuttering. What the hell was that for? Takes you by surprise, like the bullet you never saw coming. This will be the last time. This will be the last time. This will be the last time you take me.
So that brings us to Carry the Ghost, which came out a year later, which is similar stylistically to Ledge. And around that same time, you put out this Young in the City EP, which is super different than any of your self-titled stuff. So what was going on in your head and your heart in 2015 that was causing you to begin to experiment musically, that kind of where Young in the City kind of came out of?
Well, I'd had some time on my hands, and I wanted to do something different. I think I had reached my, my cap on what I was able to do with what I was doing at the time. And I like a lot of different kinds of music. I don't really listen to that much singer-songwriter music, and so I wanted to make things that I was excited about, like I always have. And there was a time when I was excited about singer-songwriter music. I've got past that. So I love rock music, I love pop music, I love a lot of things. So Young in the City was an opportunity to write something without putting any restrictions on myself about how serious it needed to be, or lyrically thoughtful, or I didn't have any of these pretenses of things that I'd done before to some kind of standard. I could just kind of do whatever I wanted, which was really liberating and freeing, and gave me a new perspective on what music can be. And I think some of that has bled into coming out.
Yeah. I got to tell you, Young in the City came at an interesting time in my life. I felt like I was in a musical funk. Like, I couldn't find anything that I was enjoying. Like, I went through this phase where I was, like, enjoying the synth pop stuff and synth alt rock stuff. And I was just like, I'm sick of synth and I'm sick of electronic drums. And I just want a good, like, rock album. Like, I want Bruce Springsteen, but in 2016 or whatever. And then I stumbled upon Young in the City, and I was like, oh, yeah, that's what I wanted. So thank you for doing it.
Yeah, I'm glad to hear that. Yeah. I mean, it's all, you know, we like different things at different times, and I think it's just important to express ourselves in the ways that we want to, and not feel like we have to make a certain kind of music or kind of music. You know, there's so much, I think there's so much expectation. You know, you associate yourself with whatever kind of music you listen to, and it, you know, if your music isn't maybe cool enough or indie enough or whatever, then it reflects poorly on you. And I think that's kind of a bunch of bullshit. So I've been trying to things that I like, you know, and then people like it or they don't.
Yeah.
Now the streets are lit up with your voices, planting the seeds of divorces. Wild horses couldn't drag you away.
That brings us to the newest one, White Noise, which comes out in September. It's different than your solo stuff. It's really good, like I said earlier. Kind of, I got a few questions about it, but first, give fans insight of what they can kind of expect thematically, not musically, but thematically, out of what you're trying to do with this album.
Well, there's a lot of... So when I went into writing this record, I didn't want it to be as confessional as some of the things I'd made before. I wanted to capture a mood, like a cultural mood and a political mood, and a critique of some things that isn't... So I wanted to find ways to like paint a mood with you know, little abstractions and collections of phrases. So I think that's evident in the record. I wouldn't say one particular thing, but I think there's a lot of weird shit going on in the world, and I think there's an overall sense of anxiety and uncertainty and some fear, and also just an oversaturation of information that can be really disorienting for me. And so I was trying to capture all those feelings in the collection of songs.
Yeah. Now, you mentioned how you haven't made a lot of strategic decisions on why to write this or what direction. I imagine, though, there was some thought on whether or not to make us an album under the name Noah Gunderson that sounded like this, namely just because of what has come before that and what fans might expect. So talk a little bit about, was there any thought in your mind, like, maybe I should do this under another thing? Or, like, why put out White Noise under Noah Gunderson with some fans that might be like, what the heck?
Yeah, right. Well, because I got to live with myself, ultimately. Like, I've built my career around my own name, for better or worse. And so, if I was to just continue playing the music, the kind of music I'd played before under my own name, I would be pretty bummed out. Mm-hmm. So I knew that continue doing this, I had to be... make music that made me happy. That's the short answer.
Yeah. Now, are you right before you kind of announced this album, you erased everything off of Instagram and kind of like, it almost looked like you were flipping over this new leaf type thing. Can fans that come out to this tour, upcoming tour, can they expect to still see some of this older stuff? Or are you like, I'm done with it. I kind of want to move on from that.
I mean, if it was, I don't know. I think there's still a place for some of that older music. So obviously this new tour is going to be focused primarily on the new material, but there's songs in there. I mean, I love the fact that the songs are meaningful to people, and I want to respect that. And I know it can be frustrating going to see a band that you only play new songs. And so there's a bit of a balancing act I have to find where being true to myself and doing what I want to do, but also trying to be respectful of the people that have allowed me to get to this point.
Yeah. Yeah.
For those older tunes.
Have you seen the guy on that comments on like so much of your stuff that talks about the fact that you look like Johnny Depp from Pirates of the Caribbean, like almost every post? It's such a, I love when people are committed to being trolls. It's just yeah. Commitment on his part.
I'll take it though. I mean, there are plenty of words.
Yeah.
I respect it.
You gotta. I'd love to play a track off the new album to end the interview with. Could you pick one out and then tell me a little bit about the writing of that one?
Sure. Let's maybe play Bad Desire. We just released that a week ago, I guess.
Yeah.
And that was one that I wrote. That was one I wrote actually. Was an older tune, and I had it online as an acoustic song, and brought it to our producer Nate, and we kind of wanted to sort of like Paul Simon 70s drums, got a little bit of Ryan Adams in there, I guess, but it's a love song. It's a song about heartbreak. It's a song about wanting to be with somebody, but knowing that it's not working. And so ultimately,
yeah, that's great. Before we play that, let people know when the album's coming out, where they can get it, and where they can holla at you.
Yeah, record comes out White Noise September 22nd out on Cooking Vinyl, and it'll be on all the internet places and hopefully in your local record store.
Ooh, perfect. Noah, thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you.
And here is Bad Desire.
Woman, I can't please you. I will only leave you. Sure as the night follows day. If you start to wonder, if you spill them under, well, honey, you should run. I go home and turn off the lights and I'll leave you alone. Leave you alone.